As a business leader, you know attracting top talent is just the beginning. Real growth happens when you lead yourself and others well. Creating a company culture that attracts, nurtures, and retains the best of all things. We'll teach you how to make an impact through a holistic leadership approach. Reframing success in leadership. This is the Talent Magnet Institute podcast with your host, Mike Sipple Jr.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Talent Magnet Institute podcast. I have the distinct pleasure to be in the studio today with Rachel Druckenmiller, founder and CEO of Unmuted, contributor to Thrive Global. Rachel was named in 2015, named number one health promotion professional in the U.S. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. I'm stoked to be here. This is going to be an awesome and I think very timely conversation.
Absolutely. So Rachel and I have, I was introduced to Rachel's work just over a year ago, in fact, and have really been drawn in to the energy that she brings into the world, the love and care, the vulnerability, and her singing skills, which we may get into in a little bit. But our mutual friend, Kevin Monroe of the Extraordinary Leaders podcast, had Rachel, you were on his podcast. That's how I got to meet you. So I'm so excited to have you in the studio today. I would love for you to share with our listeners that have tuned in a little bit about your practice, kind of what you speak on, how you influence the world that you have the ability to connect with.
Yeah. So first of all, second shout out to Kevin. He is the kindest, most amazing, grace-filled, gratitude-filled human being that I know. And so what I do is I work with and support organizations and associations and their teams and leaders to be more connected and resilient, so that they can thrive at work and at home. And I do that through kind of a context and a framework that I use, which is around how you can get unmuted. So we know that you're on mute was kind of the phrase of 2020. And what I stand for, my company, you know, is named Unmuted. And so I believe in unmuting ourselves, which is really about showing up with more joyful aliveness and more intentionality and more self-advocacy so that we can intentionally create a life that really excites us at work and at home. So I do that through workshops and keynotes and did over 100 virtual workshops in 2020. Wow. And I really like helping people to reimagine the virtual space and recognizing it doesn't have to be eyes glazed over, boring and terrible. It can actually be engaging, lead to deep and meaningful connection, conversation, and even sometimes tears, depending on how into it people get. It's been really gratifying to see the impact. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this month's theme of January is all about leadership mindsets, and February's theme is all about employee engagement. These are the two of the biggest things that we heard in the fourth quarter of how do I continually keep my people engaged, knowing that we're going to be at least another 6 months in a different space and probably never quite come back to the way it used to be. And also, how do I get my mind right? How do I wrap my head around how to help others have the right mindsets, think like healthy, holistic, talent magnet informed leaders. So we're going to touch on both of these today.
Great.
And when you speak to the opportunity to help people bring their whole self, as you said, can you unpack that a little bit? What does whole self mean? When you say that to an audience, what are you hoping they take away from that?
And I think it's really a shift away from this idea that we go to work to do a job. We're like a cog in a machine. And that's what the expectation is, that we show up, just get the job done. Leave your personal stuff at the door as if you can really separate them. I mean, we know that our emotional world and our relationships outside of work have a significant impact on the way that we show up at work. So for instance, if you had a fight with your spouse in the morning, and then you have a phone call with a prospect an hour later, you're probably not going to show up as the most effective version of yourself if you're still carrying the emotional burden of the dysfunction that you had in the morning. So when we talk about whole self, I like to distinguish this because I think a lot of people think of whole self as like, I'm just going to come to work and do whatever I want and say whatever I want. This is me being authentic, which to me feels like a giant cop out. And it's still work. It's like still a professional setting. But the goal is that we are more honest about who we are and what we need as a person, and that we are able to bring up things like, I've had a hard time managing childcare, homeschooling at home. It's been really hard to really focus on my work. And I'd love to come up with some strategies for how we might adjust my schedule, maybe reconfigure the team, delegate some different projects, because in all honesty, I want to be able to give my best. I'm having a hard time doing that right now. And most people are terrified to have conversations like that. But at organizations that honor the whole person, there's a psychologically safe space for that to come to the surface without fear of like getting canned just for speaking up and saying, I'm having a hard time.
Yeah. And I'll, you know, flipping that to an individual who's listening today that says, you know, I've never asked my employees that. Again, I hope you have. I hope you've been following our podcast and our community. And I hope you have recognized that it's a really big deal to do this. You need to do the same, but you also need to open the door, be proactive, and be the one to lead the way so that others will share, to ask these questions as well, right? Now's a great time to say, you know, as we move in to the second half of the first quarter, really want to make sure everybody's doing okay. Like, what else do you need? What other resources do you need? How are we showing up? What can we do to energize the rooms, the virtual rooms that we're in, and the physical rooms that we're in that we're, you know, socially distanced, of course. So the unmuted life is getting people to show up, bring their whole self, but also be responsible with that, right?
Yeah.
Be thoughtful around how they show up and to be able to raise their hand and say, I don't want to be muted. Here's a need I have. May I please share this with you just to get creative and think about a way, and that people would accept it on the other end to say, you know what? Thank you for bringing that to me. I should have asked you.
Yeah. And I think to your point, Mike, about asking the questions, some of the questions are so simple. And since we're talking about mindset, I think of two questions to really start with. So the one question is from a book called The Art of Possibility, which was written by Benjamin and Rosamund Zander. And Benjamin Zander heads the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra. And there's a question in his book that I love. I read it years ago, and it's, how can I be a contribution today? So imagine what would happen if each of us woke up in the morning and we started with that intention. How can I be a contribution today? And then the way to enact that in an organization, for instance, could be something as simple as asking people on your team, how can I best support you right now? How can I best support you right now? Because so many people, when they're in the mode of survival, when they're in a mode of reactivity, they can't access the creative thoughts. They can't access the solutions to the problems they're in the midst of. And oftentimes they're afraid they might be next on the chopping block if they bring up anything and are a squeaky wheel. And so one of the greatest gifts that I think a leader can give to their people right now is one, to ask a question like that. How can we best support you right now? And two, even to acknowledge your own challenges. So, you know, hey, I've got kids at home too, and it's, this has been really hard, or gosh, I'm really social and being this isolated has been such a challenge for me too. What's it been like for you? Like, people are waiting for leaders to open the doors like that, and they don't view them as weak. They just view them as human and relatable when they see a leader coming to them with a shared human struggle.
Rachel, it's so interesting. I know both of us are Brené Brown fans.
Yeah.
And we're talking on the topic of vulnerability, which Brené Brown has shared so openly. And you're a part of her Thrive Global platform.
Yeah, Arianna Huffington's program. Yeah, I write articles for them.
And then so on Friday, we recorded this episode on the 8th of January. And the quote that's in my full focus planner is Brené Brown: vulnerability is the birthplace of innovation, creativity, and change. I've shared this in one other episode, but if this is your first episode that you're tuning into, we talk a lot here at the Talent Magnet Institute about, you want to create the most innovative, creative, and safe workspace. Innovative and creative, you've got to create a safe workplace, right? That vulnerability allows people to free themselves of things they might be carrying in a way. And if it's accepted by you and by your team and by your culture, all of a sudden people say, I've never been in a place like this where I felt so safe. Now I can start opening up possibilities, right?
Yes.
You know, show me those organizations that do that. And the ROI, the innovation that comes out of those organizations usually doesn't just show up at the top. It's all the way to the place of, we're interacting with the customer, with the service, with the front line, because people can raise their hand and say, you know, I had this idea based on a customer service challenge we continue to have, or based on this product thought that I heard from a few customers. But most organizations, Rachel, and you've seen this, I'm certain, you know, that people don't raise their hand, but they have all the ideas.
Yes.
Yes. But they're afraid to raise their hand.
Yeah, it's a shift. When I think about this, the thing that comes up for me is to recognize that psychological safety is rooted in, oftentimes, in, it's rooted in curiosity. And it's rooted in an ability to have your voice heard. So when I think of the digital space, so often what happens is that, and one of the leaders I've had the opportunity to learn from, a last name, John Berghoff, and one of the things that is happening a lot of times, right, has been happening in the past and currently, is we look to one person to give us all of the information, all the answers. There's the expert with all the answers, there's the leader with all the answers, there's the VP with all the answers. And we don't realize that we have a wealth of knowledge and insight in the collective wisdom of the people there. And if we just asked, using like appreciative inquiry, if we just asked a generative question, like, when have we been at our best in the past? And I would encourage anyone listening to think about this and to take some time to reflect on it. When have we been at our best in the past? When have we been at our best in the past 10 months? What's a story from within our organization that makes us really proud that emerged in the past 10 months? How might we be creative and innovative as we move forward in the future, trying to reinvent ourselves? I mean, when you ask people, they first have to come out of that state of being completely frozen in fear. And happy to talk through that if you want to talk through a little bit of the neuroscience of fear, because I think that's often helpful for people to understand that when you're in a state of fear, your brain shuts down and you literally, the prefrontal cortex, part of your brain responsible for higher level thinking and problem solving, it goes offline when you're kind of paralyzed by stress and anxiety. And so by deep breathing, by presencing, by mindfulness, we can bring the thinking brain back online to problem solve. But we have to first create a space where people feel safe to share, and they have it modeled where, ooh, people who speak up here, people who ask questions respectfully here, people who challenge people here in a respectful way, are heard and are not kicked out of the tribe for having perhaps a contrary opinion or for asking a question of somebody who has a particular title.
Yeah, and I do believe, Rachel, we speak often of the power of people feeling valued, heard, and understood, mm-hmm. right? And so many people go 12, 24, 32 years mm-hmm. of never feeling like they've ever been valued, heard, and understood. Yeah. And that burden in the workplace and that burden carries with us into our personal lives, right? We bring that burden home. We bring that pain, that disconnect, that frustration, that why is everyone against me? You know, what's happening? Mm-hmm. We bring it home all too often. And we've seen it from CEOs down to people who are coming out of college and have their first 5 years of work experience. What can you share about that connection between work and home and personal and professional? Because I know you like to bring those two things together mm-hmm. and that's part of the whole self. But what have you seen? What have you mm-hmm. seen in your work around well-being and resilience? How do people's lives change when they do this?
You know, I think part of it is recognizing first and foremost that everyone's carrying an invisible backpack of some kind. In 2020, I was hit by a car and fractured my back, and I was in a back brace for 2 months. I would do presentations and trainings in what looked like a backpack, and that was visible. You know, so if you have a physical injury that people can notice right on the surface that something is wrong, it's easy for them to offer you compassion and grace and kindness. But the challenge is a lot of people are dealing with psychological trauma, with psychological challenges of some sort related to mental health, whether it's depression or anxiety or a whole slew of other things. And no one can see that. And so that person might just be deemed difficult. Gosh, that person's being so difficult. That person's being such a challenge. They're being defiant. I fell into this 4 years ago when I burned out and got mono. And I was difficult to work with. I was unapproachable because I was so needing to protect my ego. And I was terrified that I'd be exposed as being inadequate or incompetent or insufficient in some way, that I just sort of pushed people away. And it got to the point where it affected people's ability to trust me. It affected people's willingness and desire to even reach out to and approach me because they didn't see me as approachable. And I had to, one, completely burn out and bottom out, lose my voice, get very, very sick with mono. Until maybe 4 or 5 months later, I had read the book An Everyone Culture by Bob Keegan and Lisa Leahy. And they told a story about this woman who was high-powered, high performer, strong performer, not the best people and compassion and emotional intelligence skills. And she kind of got kicked out of a leadership group and didn't know why. And then it wasn't until she started to do some reflecting to recognize, ooh, I had some responsibility in this. And then she went to people and apologized. And so I started doing that. I started going to people and saying, hey, I've been showing up this way and I see that it's had a negative impact and I'm not going to excuse it, but I am committed to moving forward in a different direction and supporting you and building trust again. So I think part of it, that takes time to get to the point of having the self-awareness to then go and tail between your legs. And that those conversations suck. They're they're so uncomfortable. And I like wish I could find 50 other things to do besides that. But I think that's one of the things we can do. Another is, you know, to really get curious with people, knowing that everyone's got these invisible backpacks, asking questions like, how can I best support you? Or even asking a question, this is another one people can take back, is what outside of work kind of helps you thrive? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it specifically that makes it most likely for you to thrive? And I remember a story that I read that Arianna Huffington had told, where there was a woman who had 7:30 a.m. meetings scheduled with her manager, and she was frequently late for them. And the manager was really frustrated. Why doesn't she show up on time for these meetings? And she finally asked her, she said, well, what's the most important thing outside of work that helps you thrive? And she said, I got to drop off my daughter at 7:30 every morning, and our meeting's at 7:30. And so I'm always late because I have to drop her off. She's like, he just told me that. Right. But people aren't asking the question and they don't know. Employees they're scared and they don't feel like they can ask. So for us to recognize people's lives are multifaceted. So many people are carrying trauma and pain that they've not dealt with, that's affecting how they show up. And so as leaders, for us to lead with curiosity, genuine curiosity, not for the sake of manipulation, to lead with compassion, to lead with empathy, to assume good intent and to try to move away from judgment and toward compassion and curiosity. I feel like if we were to show up more that way and then be honest about some of our own stuff, not everything. I mean, there's important to kind of set some boundaries, but for us to be willing to say, hey, you know, I really struggled with that too a lot. I'd be happy to chat with you about some ways I was able to get through it. So those are some things that come to mind for me.
Rachel, one of the things that's so interesting, and I don't think you know this, but episode 60, a CEO and president of an organization called the Moats Corporation, Joe Moats, that entire episode is talking about unpacking. He happens to be a backpacker, a cyclist, and he talked about people pack for their fears, right? Mm. So the more fears you have, the more burden you carry, the more you stick in your backpack, the more we get into a position of leadership. This is a quote from that podcast episode. The more we tend to carry more armor, mm-hmm. carrying it around with us all the time can be truly detrimental. Mm-hmm. Joe talked about what it meant to him to identify that he was packing for his fears and how that almost killed him, right? That he shares a few tips and tools. He's got a TEDx talk that he's done on this, you know, and he speaks from it from a vulnerability as a CEO of a very successful company in his community and what it means for unpacking. And you hit it so directly. I was like, oh my goodness, that was episode 60, you know, when we talked about that. And it's so true. We carry way too much with us. And if we could just like the point example you just gave, you had an employer who was frustrated at someone who's always late. When she asked that one question, she found out that that person's greatest joy in life is protecting her children, her child. And that was what was creating the tension. Well, I mean, just why don't we just have you show up at 8, right? It's that easy, but yet so few do it. Yeah. And again, we know that leaders that are listening to this, you want to think like a talent magnet. You want to help people be able to bring out their greatest good in every single thing they do. And this is what we're talking about. What Rachel is sharing with you today is exactly what we're talking about, to create both for yourself and for those around you, your ability to do these types of things, identify blind spots, figure out your fears and get those out of your backpack so you're not carrying so much weight around with you.
Yeah.
You know, what you shared, I mean, I know you're a singer.
I am.
And you mentioned earlier that you went so far to losing your voice, which I believe that singing brings you great joy. I know it does for, you know, your tribe, the people who follow your brand. It brings us great joy. So I'm assuming that was a real emotional dynamic that happened to you.
It was really scary. It's happened actually a number of times. So it's happened in college. It happened. I had vocal nodules actually when I graduated just from overusing my voice, which they tell you to really temper. I mean, there'd be times where I would write notes to colleagues and say, I can't talk this week. It didn't happen frequently, but that has happened before. And it's interesting what happens when you are silenced. And part of this was when I burned out. When we silence ourselves, and so often as leaders, there's just this chatter. It's like, there's no off. It's like, what is silent? It's literally always noise, always things we could be doing, always things we could be fixing, always problems or things we could be launching, or it's never silent. And so what I experienced was going through that time of having to literally be muted. I was so much more attuned to the people around me. I was so much more attuned to my emotions because I wasn't always just kind of talking over myself, literally. And I think it's a really helpful thing to do, just to recognize the power of silence and stillness. And I still struggle with this. This is probably one of my biggest struggles, honestly, still. Sometimes we don't always learn the lesson the first time. But it also is a sign to me that, you know what? I made a bet with myself. I said, all right, when I get my voice back fully, like, I'm really going to use it. I'm going to use it. And that was a really strong motivator for me. And so it's come back, and actually talking to some folks I know about potentially recording some stuff this year. So we'll see.
That's great. And when you say I'm going to use my voice, The unmuted life isn't just your singing. It's using what you have seen through your life experiences to use your voice to impact the lives of those in the room.
Yeah. And, you know, when I think of getting unmuted, it's like in your career, it's asking for the opportunities you want. It's speaking up for yourself. It's advocating for others. It's pursuing an opportunity when you're 75% instead of 100% qualified. It's creative expression. It's emotional expression. It's listening to your body. It's speaking up in relationships, asking for forgiveness, being willing to reconcile, offering gratitude and appreciation. I mean, it's this fullness. There's a fullness of life when we are truly showing up in an unmuted way. It's not brazen or brash, but it's this unbridled, joyful aliveness that can't help but positively affect and radiate onto other people.
So the impact you have, a lot of your education is in health and psychology, which is a beautiful combination. And from the health perspective, how does this make us physically and emotionally healthier based on what you're sharing? What are, you know, some of those points that you like to rest on?
Yeah, well, there's a woman named Dana Jack. She's a professor, worked at Harvard. She's now at another university, I believe, but she's done work in the space of self-silencing and has discovered that when we self-silence, it has a ripple effect across multiple areas of our lives. It can lead to depression. It can lead to loneliness. It can lead to eating disorders. It can lead to things like irritable bowel syndrome. It can lead to an increased risk of just having a whole slew of health issues because we're silencing and suppressing. We are a society that a lot of times suppresses things that are uncomfortable that we don't want to address instead of getting to the root cause. And so it really has this, it affects people's marriages. I mean, when we silence ourselves, we can all, and I would encourage everyone to think of a time where you've silenced yourself. And I don't know if anything, you know, specifically comes up for you, Mike. I'll give you a moment to think about it, but you know, maybe even think of a time where you silenced yourself in some aspect of your life, whether it was creative expression, listening to your body, at work with a team, and you're in a interpersonal relationship, and it had a negative impact. Or I think most of us can think of a situation like that, right?
Yeah. Mine, Rachel, is very, I mean, it's interesting when people have heard this and their responses, like, what? So I, for years, did not enjoy, never took what I believe, you know, I'm a man of faith and I would pray for God to bring opportunity, but I didn't really understand what that meant until one day I got a call from a high school coach. Actually, my assistant got a call from my high school coach at our office asking me if I would be willing to speak at commencement at my high school. And my immediate reaction was no. And I'm really glad that Chris does what Chris does. She's now an executive search consultant for our company, but she still plays that role of like, are you sure you need to say yes to this, right? And I've learned to say yes to things Chris says I should say yes to. But until that moment, my silence was, I would say no to 80% of the speaking engagements that were presented to me.
Wow.
And it was just kind of a rapid, like, no, I don't want to do that because I'm, you know, what can I bring to the table, right? Mm-hmm. It was in that moment that I recognized that here, oh, Lord, I need to ask for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I've been praying for opportunity. You've been bringing them. I didn't want the kind of opportunity you were bringing me. So I was saying no, and therefore I'm suppressing the good that, you know, maybe someone in that room's life will be impacted by the words that I share, right?
Yeah.
So that's what motivates me in speaking, is that there's a reason. There's a reason why, you know, almost 150 episodes ago, we started the podcast, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason why advisors and friends were saying, you know, you really should do this podcast thing because there's a level of insights and perspectives, and most importantly, access to leaders like you that we can bring to the table for our audience and to help people think about new perspectives. If I would have continued to silence myself and constantly say no to opportunity and fear, you know, I mean, get it. Public speaking is all about the fear of man, right?
Sure.
We're afraid to be in front of. and now I, you know, I have to say I'm certainly come across more as an extrovert because I'm ready to just jump into the conversation and go, right? Now I am called on to be a public speaker. I'm called on to be guest in podcast episodes. And I'm called on, most importantly, by clients who want me to come in and talk to their people.
Yeah.
Inspire their teams, right? So that's very real. You know, my unmuting was that opportunity, which you can find on YouTube if you type Mike Sipple commencement. And that recording was done by, of course, my mother, who was also a graduate, proud graduate of Covington Holmes High School. But, you know, it, when you put it that way, it's like, yeah, now here's the piece of this, everyone that's listening and tuning in. How many years was I suppressed?
Yeah.
How many years were there people that could have been impacted by the passion and the desire to see other people succeed by me saying no? And that's what carries the most emotion for me. I remember into the crowd at that commencement and not just seeing one set of eyeballs, but many, you know, hearing people from the crowd on the video yell out an amen during the speech. That was my affirmation that the muting I've been putting on myself, the lack of confidence, the fear, the concern, that's all fake, right?
Yeah.
It only exists in my mind. So that's mine. And thank you for asking that question.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like, we hesitate to do this, but it's like, everyone has some area of their life where they mute themselves. Like, I don't think very many people are fully expressed in all areas. So you might be really competent at work and like, I'm nailing it. But I feel totally like I'm suppressed at home. Like, even if you're somebody who typically has it all together, oh, I can't tell my spouse that I'm having a hard time right now because I'm the one that has to hold it together. And if I let them know, I'm just going to keep caring more because they can't know. Meanwhile, gosh, they would love to have that connection and intimacy with you for you to just open up and be honest and vulnerable. Or perhaps you were a musician. I feel like this is the case. A lot of executives, like at some point, were like a musician of some kind or an artist of some kind. And they just let that fall to the wayside because like that doesn't make them money or that's not in their mind the best use of their time. But when we express ourselves creatively, it has a ripple effect in other ways. So when I sing, I mean, I loved singing from the time I was little, but I wouldn't do it in front of people because I was afraid of similar to you, of judgment, of messing it up, of not being good enough, and really self-doubt. Like, all of us are plagued by self-doubt in some form or another. Some people can move through it more confidently, but it really takes, you know, I believe confidence is the byproduct of action. And as we take action, we get more confident. The first time I sang, I remember, like, I've sung in, you know, public before, of course, but in high school, I took voice lessons and I was doing it just to improve my voice selfishly for myself. And my instructor, I remember she told me, we were training, she said, oh, so what song are you going to sing for the recital at the year end? And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't, this is not for other people. Like, this is, she's like, oh, well, all of my students pick a song. So I did it. I suffered through it. I did not enjoy that experience. Like, jaw was locked. I did not enjoy that. And it wasn't until I got to college that I came back from a semester in Spain, which is such a vibrant and alive culture, which I was terrified to go to do that because I had only ever been further west than West Virginia. I live in Baltimore. It's not that far. And had never been out of the country. And I was terrified to do that, but just taking that risk, that big step to live in another country for 4 months was eye-opening and soul-opening. And I came back and I'd been in gospel choir because you don't have to try out. And I decided they were doing tryouts for solos for the spring concert. And I waited till everyone left. And I said, I want to try out for a solo. And I was scared and nervous, but I stepped up to the microphone anyway. And I sang. And it was through that experience of allowing my voice to be heard that about a year later, I started connecting with some other folks on campus. One who was a young man who was a sophomore. I was a senior. And 15 years later, you know, we're married. And I wonder, silencing ourselves, muting ourselves, regardless of what area of our life that it's in, affects more than just us always. And so I don't want to judge it and say it's selfish, but kind of, because us withholding in that way in some form, whether it's a gift, an expression, an emotion, a feeling, an ask, when we withhold in that way, we're also making it okay for everybody else to suppress and withhold in silence. Mm. But when I've had people say to me, I saw your singing videos on LinkedIn. I started putting videos of myself dancing because I love to dance. And I've had clients reach out to me because they like the authenticity of my dancing videos and they've hired me to do work for them. So it's contagious. Like getting unmuted is contagious. We're like, oh, they can do that. You know, if they can like sing on LinkedIn, like, okay, you know, maybe I can do the thing that I've been scared of. I mean, that's as somebody who was very introverted and shy and held back and guarded and muted in so many senses of the word for most of my life, truly, to be in the place where I am now, it's been a gradual unmuting over the past 16 years, frankly. And I feel so much more. I mean, even like I wear these shirts, these inspirational message shirts today, is Grace and Grit. When I do keynotes, I used to think that was unprofessional to do that. I need to wear a blazer. No, this is what I stand for. I'm wearing bright colored shirts with words on them. Deal with it.
Yes. I remember you sharing that when you kind of, you did some conversation on LinkedIn about that. And I love your LinkedIn profile picture. I am who I'm meant to be. This is me.
Yeah.
Right? People want authenticity. Let's start at the top and let's shed the facade that we think we are supposed to operate within. And that's for a lot of topics, right? This is dealing with gender equity, right? I remember a conversation I was having with a client and she was like, I recognize, Mike, I was telling my daughter to operate in a man's world, quote unquote, just like I did. Mm. I recognized, what am I doing? I'm perpetuating the problem, right? Yeah. Same thing with racial injustice. Like, you know, we're in this conversation all the time of not just I'm not racist, I want to be anti-racist and take action to help my fellow brother and sister, right?
Yes.
You know, these are these extra steps of recognition that stop operating the way that we all know we don't have to. You know, you can show up, you're going to light up a room in any room you walk into, Rachel. It has nothing to do with your outfit. But your shirt does add additional personality, let me tell you. So I thank you so much for joining me. This is one of the joys of being a podcast host, is you get to invite people who you know will provide energy, insights, perspective, leadership to those that are listening. I'm so excited that our audience has heard this episode. And I encourage our audience to share with us your thoughts on this episode. What key thing did you take away today when Rachel shared her perspectives on unmuting yourself? What immediately came to mind? What stood out to you? What did you say, well, I can't really do that because share that with us. Let's work together to help you unpack that so that you can bring your best self. And oh, by the way, it's like any good counselor or coach, they're helping you also help your team, right? Yes. You show up to a workshop and you're like, ooh, I'm going to learn how to lead my people better and figure out how to unpack them. And usually you learn what's first about going after us, right? Yes. You know, I remember a really good friend, we did a racial injustice talk last year, and a friend of mine who's the CEO for Democracy for America, Yvette Simpson, she shared that the first step of working on racism is you, right? Is me, right? Mm-hmm. It's the person who's thinking about it. We've got to work on us first.
Yes.
In order to love others, we have to love ourselves first. We have to also, when we're dealing with things that we want to learn how to do better, we've got to work on us, like take the speck from our own eye.
Yes.
Before we can deliver message to the world. So, Rachel, I thank you. I do want to ask, are there any additional one thing that we've not talked about yet today that you would like to bring to our audience?
That's a great question. You know, I would say that you're only one call away, either initiating or receiving, from potentially having a significant change or shift or transformation in your life. So write down the name of somebody who's been on your mind lately that you've been meaning to reach out to, that you work with, that you know, maybe somebody you haven't talked to in 6 months. Reach out to them in some form, text, call, LinkedIn message, email, carrier pigeon, whatever, get to them and let them know that you're thinking about them and that you care and that you wanted to check in and see how they're doing. That alone can make a tremendous difference. I don't think it's ever an accident that someone pops into our mind and that it's up to us to not hesitate, but to initiate.
Rachel, I do have to ask, would you be willing, we've talked about your beautiful singing voice and unmuting yourself in this way, would you mind singing for our audience today?
Yeah, sure. I think it's connected to the last thing that was shared about you're only one call away. So it's a little stanza from a song you may recognize from Charlie Puth. So here we go. I'm only one call away. I'll be there to save the day. Superman got nothing on me. I'm only one call away. There we go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Wonderful. Thank you again for being a part of today's episode. And I look forward to our next conversation, Rachel. And to those who are listening today, thank you for hanging in there. I hope you got so much value out of this conversation that it helps amplify and change the way you lead tomorrow. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Talent Magnet Institute podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode and help spread the word by leaving a review.
The Talent Magnet Institute podcast is powered by Centennial, a talent strategy and executive search firm, and the Talent Magnet Institute. You can engage with us at Talent Magnet I on Twitter or Talent Magnet Institute on LinkedIn and Facebook. Please communicate by using hashtag Talent Magnet. Find us in your favorite podcast app to subscribe, rate, and leave a review, as well as share with a colleague. You can also listen at talentmagnetpodcast.com. Our podcast studio is based in Greater Cincinnati, Ohio. We are supported by our listeners, clients, and partners from all over the world. The Talent Magnet Institute podcast is made possible by a great team that includes Janelle Spence and Christine Lewis of Centennial, Josh Chappelle and Adam Smith of Soundpress, produced by Chris Madine of New Fidelity Studios, and Audra Casino and Megan Doherty of One Stone Creative. Music written by DJ Corbett and Chris Madine. And myself, your host, Mike Sipple Jr. Thank you for joining us on the journey of developing leaders to succeed in relationships, work, community, and life, reframing success in leadership.